Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Research shows that issues of race are discussed far less in white families than they are in families of color. It's also understood that discussion of racial issues is likely to reduce racism and increase understanding. This region's racial polarization has produced animated dialogue since the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson and has led to a new organization dedicated to inspiring discussion and hope for a more inclusive future. It would take place, the family level through children and children's literature. It's called We Stories, Raising Big-Hearted Kids. Joining me to discuss the organization and how it works are We Story founders Adelaide Lancaster and Laura Horwitz. If the name Horwitz sounds familiar, it's because Laura's mom, Deborah, the veterinary behaviorist, was with us yesterday to talk about animal behavior. So it's the Horwitz Week on St. Louis on the Air. Also with us in studio is Kristen Sorth, director of the St. Louis County Library. She'll join the discussion in just a couple of moments. But Adelaide, let me start with you and just find out how all this got started.
Well, this really got started when Laura and I met about this time last year. We were moms, local St. Louis County moms. We had little kids. My kids are 5, 4, and 2. Laura's are 4 and 2. And we spent a lot of time, like I think a lot of people in this region, talking about the problems of our region and how we could, as young moms and as families, be a part of the solution. We discovered through our conversations that while we as adults were talking to other adults and reading a lot online and paying attention to what was happening in our region, the conversations in our home were not reflecting what was going on around us. And the more that we looked into that, the more we realized that we were very typical of many white families in that we didn't discuss race, especially with young children. And the more we looked into that, the more we realized that if we wanted to raise, as we were calling them, big-hearted kids who have a deep understanding of other people's stories and truths and realities, that we should really work on turning that conversation around. And our solution was to look to children's books to help us do that.
So, Laura, what you're trying to do is reach both the parents and the children through this project.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people can connect to good memories of reading a great children's book with someone they love. And what's special about children's books is they're a media that we gravitate to again and again. If your two-year-old likes a children's book, you don't read it once and put it down. It becomes a regular conversation. And that's not typically how many of us would think about conversations about racism. That's like a big, heavy, we have all this information, important stuff to think through. But if we take it one bit at a time in an ongoing back and forth, it can be an easier topic to get into and feel that we're really doing something that matters. And children's books are really powerful that way.
It's really killing two birds with one stone, isn't it? Because we should be reading to our kids anyway.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's what we love to tell people is we've tried to think about what's already happening that works for people. People are reading to their kids or striving to regularly in their family life. So that's an easy thing to change up. I'm going to read this book rather than that book. You're already doing that. And in terms of the parents, there's things that we may want to say, there's values we want to impart to our kids. And sometimes it's hard to get the words just right to the age level of our kids. Well, the children's authors have done some of the heavy lifting there. And the same with trying to make an ongoing conversation instead of one that happens in response to major headline news or a out of the blue question in your compressed moment, like jumping out of the shower or in the grocery store line or what have you. So two birds with one stone, make it simple and easy, build on what people are doing. Those are all things that we're really about. And we think that when people have an easy way to participate, their interests and their good intentions really will follow through.
Adelaide, is there a large volume of relevant children's material out there to work with?
So yes and no. oftentimes we're asked, really, are there enough books? And the truth is that there are. And there are a lot of, beautiful, wonderful stories that feature diverse characters. But the truth is also that there aren't enough. So there's always, they've always lagged. The percentage could always be more. There's a wonderful initiative that's nationwide called We Need Diverse Books. They work at the school level, the publishing level, the library level. We're very inspired by them. So we would always push for more. But there's no reason to wait because there's a lot of treasures all around. And we actually found many of them at already existing at the library, which we'll talk about later.
We'll talk about that with Kristen a little bit later. Do you find, since this discussion has become a little more prevalent in the last year and a half or so, that there is an increasing volume of relevant material coming out?
You know, I think that there in 2014, 2015, we saw slightly more books published that were by authors of color and also featured children of color or characters of color. So I think that whether that proves to be a blip or hopefully an ongoing trend, we'll see. But I think what is most powerful is thinking about what are the stories that you encounter. And once we have really whet the appetite of the families that we are working with, we're seeing that they're hungry for more and more and more. And so it's one of those things that when you start noticing, you start noticing more. So, I was this person where I looked around at my bookshelves and thought, these stories are really white. We had a lot of animal books, books about animals, and a lot of books that featured white characters. And the more that we've hunted and searched, the more beauty that we found in a variety of different medium.
And Laura, how true are these books to the real world?
Well, they are children's books.
Well, I'm
so
not talking
always
about fantasy. I'm talking about relationships and interaction.
Well, there's two things I think about there. The first is that the other powerful thing we see in children's books is the opportunity to introduce our kids to different stories and different points of view than our day-to-day life may allow. So, St. Louis is one of the nation's most segregated cities. That's already how our city is laid out and patterned. As an individual family, there's only so much that we can do to change that. But one powerful thing that we can do is bring new stories into our home, which begins to open the question of who's present and who's missing in our life, and how do I open my ears, my life, my patterns to other stories. So I think in that way, they're definitely true and compelling. Every book provides that opportunity to see a bit of yourself in a character and to see something that's different for you and takes you to a new place. For my kids, they have found so many places of connection to the characters we're reading about, whether it's in a book like Amazing Grace, where it's a great a girl who just loves telling stories. I have a kid like that, or if it's a kid who loves the magic of the moon. There's a great book like that that we love that features a protagonist of color. So it's about being able to see yourself in a variety of stories, I think.
Are you aiming this entire project primarily, Adelaide, at preschoolers, or how far up the ladder do you go?
So we've started with families that have children 0 to 7. Many of those families have older siblings as well that are tagging along for the ride, thankfully, and we welcome that. But the reason that we've chosen to focus there is that's where the research is really very clear, that bias starts to form and cement, and it's much earlier than we think, and it tends to be a time period where, teachers, educators, parents will step back and say, let's not talk about difficult issues. And the truth is that that's the time in which it's most important. And so because this is, a place where parents are already thinking about literacy and already reading books, and we know that it's critical in the social and emotional development of children, that's where we've started to focus. But the truth is it's a lifelong conversation.
During your setting up this this project and any research that you might have done, did you come to any conclusions as to why this is an issue that is not discussed in white families, but certainly is in families of color?
I have some guesses about that. So I think that, you know, oftentimes as white folks, we don't focus on our race. We're in the majority in most settings. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that we tend to, from an early age, make a habit of noticing and talking about and really kind of understanding and unpacking. Families of color don't always have that luxury, right? So oftentimes we hear from our colleagues and our friends of color that, you know, they're educating their kids for the world that they're going to live in. And that world is not always going to treat their children fairly. And as a mother, that really speaks to me and also prompts me to think about, well, what do I need to do to prepare my child to be live in and advocate for a more equitable world alongside your child? I think that also over the years, you know, we as the kind of white majority have taken on several different lenses as to how do we understand this concept of race. And the generation that I grew up in, you know, tended to be a little bit more of a colorblind mentality. We talked about everybody's equal on the inside, we're all the same, and, you know, sort of hoped that that covered the bases. And while it's steeped in very good intentions, it also, you know, can erase some very important truths about our world and reality, and also some very important truths about other people and their lived experience.
Laura, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is that books with protagonists of color have often not been marketed to white families. So the question you started with is, like, how many of these books exist? That's where a lot of families start. I was really fortunate to have early childhood educators at my daughter's first school who just incorporated these books in their curriculum as a matter of course. So once you know they're there, you look for them. But I think that's a piece, too. It's just these are widely available books. They're really compelling. They cover any topic you can dream of. But first, you have to think to look for them. And if they're not being marketed to you directly, that might not be the first thing that happens. We usually go to nostalgia when we pick up a children's book off the shelf. But there's a lot of new stuff out there, and there's different stories for, you know, every kid and every age.
But sometimes going for nostalgia can also take you to a world that may not be as politically correct as you might like them to be.
Yeah, those are some of the most surprising moments, I think, as parents. Sometimes you pull a book you remember one way off the shelf and you say, oh, that's not exactly how I remembered that. You know, I think it's an exciting time and place to rediscover. That's why I think actually the most exciting part of early parenting is you're rediscovering yourself as you're discovering this little person in front of you. And that symbiosis, like we talked about before, of that back and forth between growing a little person and growing as you are can be really powerful. And especially around a tough topic like racism, I think it's a time when people can think about opening a new chapter of discovery for themselves.
We'll want to pick up on these points when we come back. We have to take a break already. We'll come back with Kristen Sorth from the St. Louis County Library in just a moment. We are talking with Adelaide Lancaster and Laura Horwitz, founders of We Stories, Raising Big-Hearted Kids. We'll come back and continue our discussion. If you'd like to be a part of it, we would love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. And, of course, we'll take a tweet at STL On Air. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on the organization We Stories, Raising Big-Hearted Kids, in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster will appeal a court ruling that struck down key parts of a law limiting the ability of cities to profit from traffic tickets and court fines. Koster announced the appeal this morning, one day after Cole County Circuit Judge John Beatham ruled that the law was unconstitutional and targeted St. Louis area municipalities with revenue caps lower than other Missouri cities. A Missouri State Senate committee is expected to begin consideration of a proposed state budget today. Among the decisions to make is whether to proceed with funding cuts to the University of Missouri system. And the U.S. Department of Labor is holding a two-day outreach event in Bridgeton for former nuclear weapons workers, families and survivors, personnel from the department's Division of Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation are on hand to provide information about medical benefits available under a federal compensation program. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Adelaide Lancaster, Laura Horwitz, and we're bringing into the conversation Kristen Source from the St. Louis County Library. Kristen, you've been listening to all of this. What do you make of this whole project?
Well, I think it's a great project. Laura and I actually met at the For the Sake of All conference, and she told me that she had done most of her research at one of our branches, and I was pretty excited about that and thrilled, and also thought there's so much we can do together on this issue. I read a quote recently that said, diverse books provide windows for young children and mirrors for others. So I thought that that's a really good thing that brings us together on this topic.
So how exactly will you be together? How will you coordinate and cooperate?
Well, we had many of the titles in our collection already, actually almost all of them. We have about, I think there's four titles that we didn't have that we had owned previously, but that are out of print or harder to get. And so what we did was we ordered more copies of the titles that we already had. So they are available all over St. Louis County at all of our branches. So we're adding about 700 books to our collection. They will be merchandised in a way that says We Stories on them. So if parents come in looking for them, they can find them at our branches and check them out. And then ultimately, we plan to do some discussion kits that include the books and an activity for parents or caregivers to do with their children and some other things in those kits that will spark conversation at home among parents and their kids.
Adelaide, you have a curriculum, a basic curriculum. Is that a suggested list of books to read, or is it more comprehensive than that?
Sure. So every month, the families that are enrolled with us, we pick a monthly theme, and that pairs children's books, some adult resources, so podcasts and videos and articles that go along with that theme. And then we have in-group discussion and a closed Facebook group and pair different in-person events. So that those sort of things are what it means to participate in our family learning program. One option for getting the books will be at the library, and we hope that our partnership with the library helps to invite new families to the conversation as well. You know, I can give you a couple of examples. So the first month that people are with us, we talk about it's okay to notice difference and talk about race. We talk a lot about the research and get people comfortable. We spent a month talking about neighborhoods, who's missing, who's present, what's the normal that we're presenting to our kids. We have a month coming up that talks about uniqueness and intersectionality and individualism and those kinds of things.
Kristen, do you expect this to draw more families particularly with young kids to the libraries?
I think it definitely will. I think those families are already at the library, and these are some hidden gems, as Laura and Adelaide mentioned earlier, that they may not be looking for. And really, it's for anybody in St. Louis County who's interested in books that contain characters that are diverse in many different ways. The books that Adelaide and Laura have selected cover a variety of differences in individuals and families, which I think is great. And I think anybody out looking for good children's books will find them in this collection.
Laura, I mentioned off the air to you that when I was growing up, I read Uncle Remus, and I read Uncle Remus stories to my kids. And now I bet you can't find an Uncle Remus at Joel Chandler Harris, I think was the author. I bet you can't find that book in the county library. They're wonderful moral stories. I guess I'm just raising that issue because there are good stories out there that you can't find anymore that would work.
It's true. I mean, when we started shaping our idea, one of the first things we did was host focus groups with families, and we asked the families who were interested, what was your favorite children's books? And a lot of books that came up were books that tell about values or morals. They really stick with kids. And there's lots of ways to get that across. And they do sort of change with the times. But I think what's perennial there is, as parents, we use books for lots of different conversation starters. Sometimes it's to highlight awesome, spirited kids doing cool things that remind us of our kids. Sometimes it's to take us to a different place in our imagination. Sometimes it's to get a little bit of history or values, or see a part of the world that we might not be seeing. And we have books across our curriculum that do all of those things. But yeah, I'm not that familiar with that particular title.
See, that's because you're a lot younger than I am. But it's out there somewhere if you can find it. Let's take some calls in conjunction with what we're just talking about. I think Jerry and O'Fallon will bring up an issue that you probably talked about in creating this project. Jerry, go ahead.
Well, I'll be 60 on my next birthday, and I grew up in Ferguson, Missouri, and in a grade school that was essentially all white. And I still remember to this day the vile racial epithets that kids were essentially parroting from their parents, and those attitudes. Once I think the old saying, as the twig is bent, so the tree's inclined. Surprisingly, with the problems in Ferguson a couple of years ago, a lot of that dormant attitudes from people my age, which, we should be getting beyond racial stereotypes, still maintain. And it's just so important that, early on, unfortunately, I'm bringing up the negative aspects of people adopting the racial attitudes of their parents, but it's just a very, very important thing at a formative age that people are taught. Like the saying from the South Pacific song, you have to be properly taught.
Have to be taught.
To be ignorant. Yes.
Jerry, thank
anyway,
you for the call. And I hope you get over your cold, Jerry, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, what do you think? I mean, this is what you guys are all about. This is what you want to change.
So I think it's really, the kernels of stereotypes are all around us. It is impossible. We are swimming in it, all of us, regardless of our generation. And it's actually counter to the research is counter to what you might believe, that millennials actually hold as much bias and the specific kinds of bias that their parents and grandparents did as well. So for us, then it becomes, what do we do knowing that we are all exposed to this? And the research is clear, and the approach that we've taken is, then you talk about it. And when you don't talk about it, kids make sense of the gaps that you in the messages, and they fill in from the worlds around them. And so, yes, sometimes it's more explicit, sometimes it's not. But if we don't talk about it, if we don't talk about how things came to be the way they are, then we're guaranteed to just keep perpetuating.
Let's bring in another caller who'll join us on this part of the conversation. That's Rita in House Springs. Rita, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you, ladies, for what you're doing. I'm a grandma of biracial children, and I'm a woman who has watched race since the time I was reading Uncle Remus and knew that the tar baby story, I knew what that was about. Those books are not around now, from my point of view, because they point to the racial attitude. They must be pulled back up. Little Black Sambo was my favorite book when I was 5 years old. I'm 71. I was in a racial situation over Easter where my black honey-in-law, who is the father of my two precious grandchildren, went down to Dexter, Missouri, and I watched what the children in Dexter, Missouri did with a black man in their living room. I am so glad that the conversation is being had. I also want to say, here's what I want to see. I want us to have a biracial picnic. I want us to invite black and white children and black and white mamas and daddas, because if we don't, trying to change our children will never, ever happen until we change ourselves.
Rita, very good points. Thank you so much for making the call. Any comment, Laura?
Oh, I love so much of what you're saying. Both of the previous callers, grandparents, are some of our favorite people. We do have favorite stories that are more contemporary that we hope grandparents will consider adding to their collection. That would be one of the kits we're hoping to build out with the library. But my daughter loves a book called The Hello Goodbye Window, and it features a biracial family, but what it also features is a grandpa who is just silly. And to her, that is just the best thing ever. It reminds her of her grandpa. And I think that the caller's exactly right. You know, the parents have to get into the mix. We need to have these conversations across our community and with one another. And it's an opportunity, and it's great to hear the support.
Adelaide, go ahead.
And I would just add that we were actually, one thing we didn't anticipate but are so pleased about is the number of biracial, multiracial, and transracial families that have reached out to us and are participating in the program and have their own affinity group to build community amongst themselves. And I would love an invitation to the picnic.
I have a question in front of me here is, how do you reach out to the people who are not at all interested in what you're doing or what you're talking about?
Well, our first goal is to really reach out to the people who are interested and start there. You know, there's no one way to parent, and there's no one way to solve a huge complex problem like racism or our specific problems in the region. What we think of what we're doing is really inviting families who are interested and want to participate but who haven't been part of the larger conversation happening in our region as of yet about racial equity to be part of it. And as that group grows, I think it says a lot to our community institutions and to other families when you see 80, 100, 200 families, and that's the numbers of families we've heard from with very little word-of-mouth marketing only so far, who are interested, I think it starts to open a little question for folks who are not yet interested. Maybe, well, what's going on over there? That looks exciting.
Kristen, I wonder if any consideration is being given by the library as being one of the key institutions in our area here to having conversations, to bringing groups together. And I know in Ferguson, the library there played a very, very important role in community togetherness. Anything like that perhaps in the works?
Sure. We actually have talked with Adelaide and Laura a little bit about having programs that surround these topics, especially for parents to come in and meet at the library and have those discussions. We do have some discussion groups at some of our branches that cover current events, and they are talking about the For the Sake of All report, for the Ferguson report, and we also have those available as book discussion kits, so you can actually check out a book discussion kit about the For the Sake of All project, and it has questions, and you can discuss it in your book clubs.
Let's take another quick call here, this one from Clayton. Michael joins us. Make it quick, though, Michael, if you would. We're running out of time.
Hi, I just wanted to congratulate them on starting this organization. I actually work for a group called Bring Me a Book St. Louis, and we put classroom libraries in schools and under-resourced schools like Northside Community School and Eagle College Prep, and I just wanted to commend them for starting this organization, and we're all working on the same issues together, so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for the call.
I really appreciate that, and we know of your organization that's doing great work, and I think that that's one of the exciting things about the work that we're starting to do is how many great things are already happening here, and we really see our role as bringing a large group of folks who haven't been involved yet to the table and strengthening those collaborations. I will say, and this might be a good point to say, that from our family learning program, our next sort of pivot and where we're going as an organization is starting to empower parents to connect together across race to look at all the different places where children are interacting with literature. So in schools and community centers and thinking about how we can shape that and improve that for all of our children.
Can you give me a very quick example, and I mean very quick, in less than a minute, of the kinds of things that you're talking about? We talked about reading an excerpt from the book. Is something we can do in a minute?
Sure, let's do it. This book is called Please, Baby, Please. It's by Spike Lee and Tonya Lewis Lee. It's a great family favorite. What it really shows is a mischievous toddler being a toddler. If you have a toddler, you'll relate to it.
You have 30 seconds to do this.
So throughout it goes, not on your head, baby, 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 please. keep off the wall, baby, baby, please, baby. And the rhythm changes a little bit, but it basically is just a very compelling black little girl being an adorable toddler and breaking all the rules.
Showing that all kids are alike, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
We've got to let it go at that. Congratulations on the program. Good luck with it. Adelaide Lancaster, thank you for being with us.
Thank
Laura
you.
Horowitz, thank you for coming. And Kristen Sorth, great to see you again.
Good to see you,
thank
too.
You for
Thanks.
Being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.